Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets you tough, just remember. Don't kill you, make you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I beg you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Welcome to Contending for Truth Radio this evening for our Parental Sovereignty Radio show. We're glad that you've joined us if you're listening live or if you're listening already on the archives. We're excited. We've got a great show tonight. You know, it's a good day. It's a real good day. It's been a long time coming that we had a good old-fashioned filibuster that lasts and lasts, and we're going to encourage him to just push it as far as he can on the Senate floor. It's going to be a good thing for this country. You know, you can't beat him when he sits up there and reads Green Eggs and Ham to his children and to the children of America. This has been a great day. And we're going to talk about Obamacare and the filibuster towards the end of the show. There's a lot to talk about. But we're going to start the show out tonight with something that I'm very excited about. You know, over the last 3 years, starting, of course, with Herman Cain, I've used Blog Talk Radio and so has my co-hosts in many ways to support candidates. whether they be Herman Cain, conservatives coast to coast, started out as Cain coast to coast. The whole purpose was to support his candidacy, and people like Zach Poskovich in Tennessee, and Dan here in California, and the many, many others, Don Chamberlain down in the 7th District, down in Alabama, and other people like Kay Carl in Alabama. Anybody who listens very long to Contending for Truth Radio knows that I think Alabama rocks. I've been honored to have contact with a number of candidates on different levels, and this one tonight I am very, very excited about, because I know exactly where Jonathan Barbee stands. I know what his standards are. I know how firmly he believes them. When Jonathan Barbee draws a line in the sand, he leaves it there. He understands morality. He understands what effect television and many things that we expose our children to, what it has to do with affecting their character. He understands Common Core. Boy, does he understand Common Core. Alabama is the only state that I know of that was writing the book, and Jonathan's been right in the middle of that. I could go on and on and on and on, but we're going to look at Jonathan Barbee tonight because he is running for the Public Service Commissioner of Alabama. As we introduce this, you know, Rodney, any more local than you can get is the Public Service Commissioner of a state. And we're going to learn about it tonight. I'm looking forward to finding out exactly what a Public Service Commissioner really does. Sometimes we don't know what some of these more local elections are for. But let me tell you, they're just as important as the big ones, and more. I believe more. I believe I'm like you, Rodney. I mean, if you can collect 500 groups of people to help get good conservative people elected in offices all across the state, you're going to have plenty of voters to take care of the national office. And Jonathan Barbee is not only going to make a difference, because I believe in him, but I'm going to tell you what else he's going to make a difference. He's going to, as he's running, he's going to collect some voters that have conservative values, and that's a part of it. That's a big, huge part of it. Jennifer Montrose and Stacey Thomas is going to be with us tonight. She's been on hiatus. She's been very, very busy. She's going to take the time to join us this evening. And Dan Wilson and of course, Rodney Stanhope out here in California. I'm going to take a few minutes and pass it around to our hosts real quick for some real quick opening remarks, and then we'll bring in Jonathan, and we'll talk about his campaign, talk about what he's going to do, talk about local business in Alabama. Jonathan's been a big part of that. He's got experience with it, and we're going to talk about that kind of stuff. You know, I want to tell you, he firmly believes about families. He understands the function of families, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. But first, I'm going to bring in Rodney, let you give some opening remarks, and then if you would, pass it to Dan, and then Dan to Stacy, and Stacy to Jennifer. We'll bring it back. Let's make them real, real quick, and then we'll bring Jonathan in and have great discussion. Rodney, I pass it right over to you.
Hey, Scott, how you doing? So, you know, you're right. With local, and I'm very excited to have him on the show tonight, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. You know, I had a discussion with someone today, but, you know, how are we going to win the governor's seat in California? We don't have a good candidate. And I said, we're not. We're going to win the governor's seat because you're going to work on a school board race. And I actually got a candidate that's interested in running for school board. She was thinking state assembly. I convinced her, started school board. It gets you the experience. You know, I'm tired of Republicans voting people into office that then forget we the people put you there. Tonight's a prime example. We're now on 7 hours of Ted Cruz, Stand With Cruz, and we got a hashtag Cruz Control because of hippie chick, Terry Peters, down in San Diego. And it's amazing the support he's getting, except from fellow Republicans like Mitch McConnell. And it's like, you idiot, come on. He's doing the right thing. Take Obamacare out, fund the government, and let's move forward with real health care reform. You know, and in California, I met with Connie Conway the other day, and just going over a list of, I mean, hashtag epic fail that they're looking at doing in California and what the governor's going to sign. You know, so I'm getting excited. I am now up to 11 different local campaigns I'm personally working on with candidates, and two statewide campaigns. So I'm going crazy, working a lot. But with that, I look forward to tonight's show, and I pass it to Dan. Dan?
Dan, are you there? Let's pass it on to Stacy.
Thanks, Scott. Hey, guys.
I'm Stacy.
So
welcome
sorry.
Back.
It's been so long. I missed you guys so much. It's obviously been insane in my house and in my community for me to disappear the way that I have. And I promised you that I would come back whenever I could. And God bless the rain. It rained out all of our practices tonight. And I pulled out pots and pans, made a homemade dinner, and here I am. Like, it's, I feel like a person again. Common Core is the devil, and it has encompassed my life even more than it was 2 months ago. But most of you guys know that. I'm really, really grateful to all of you to let me just come back on and join your discussion when I have time. I know it just seems kind of snotty of me, but I promise it's not like that. We have a lot of homework with three kids in school. Anyhow, I'm excited that Jonathan's on tonight, too, because he was one of our very first guests on this show when we were talking about media corruption and all that, and his insight is huge, and I can't wait to pull him in and talk to him about his run for PSC. Anyways, thank you guys so much, and I'm excited about tonight's show. Jennifer?
Jennifer, go ahead and take it away.
Hey, it's going to be a good show tonight. I tell you what, you know, one of the things that I was talking with somebody earlier today, you know, that we need good, solid conservative candidates that are going to represent the people, not party and politics, but represent the people, that really are taking the time to understand what it is that they're trying to do. You know, just because a seat is vacant, we don't need to put just anybody in it. We need to make sure the person is qualified. And I will tell you, I have not met anyone more qualified, working as hard as he can to make a difference. You know, one of my favorite places in Alabama is a little place called Mentone, Alabama. I have a lot of family memories there with my son. You know, and they're wanting to put a windmill farm in a place where there's no wind. Makes no sense to me. What's up with that? You know, we got issues with coal in the state. You know, there's just a lot going on. And we don't need somebody that's long-winded. We need somebody that's going to get there and get directly to the point and make a difference, you know. And, man, I feel what Stacey's been going through. The problems that has been exemplified in the state of Alabama, the things that we've been seeing as a result of Common Core being applied throughout the state of Alabama. You know, I'm so appreciative of people like Ted Cruz who want to get out there, put himself, you know, in a difficult position to stand on his feet all day long to fight for our country, to fight for Americans. You know, we need more people out there willing to get off there. Couches and do the things necessary, because, you know, at the end of the day, I can tell you there is somebody out there that says my vote doesn't count, and trust me, it does. And I can tell you right down there in the first district, congressional district in Alabama, I think the last word I heard was it's Bradley Byrne and Dean Young are going to be in the runoff on November the 12th. So, you know, it's this is a, you know, a hard race. And I'm excited about the guests we have on tonight. You know, I'm going to turn it back over to Dan if he's on the call. And if not, we'll pass it on to Scott.
Yeah, I don't think we have Dan yet, so we'll find out.
Okay.
He's had a couple of weeks, and I'm going to tell you, he's been through it this last couple of weeks. So we want to keep him in our prayers. You know, I'm excited. You know, Jennifer, I've been as far, close behind helping you on everything you've done in Alabama for a time now, and it's because I believe in Alabama. I believe that Alabama's working, the worker bees. There's people doing things there, Kate Carl, if I started listening, I'd be in big trouble. And Jonathan's one of them. Jonathan's been a worker bee. You know, number one, he is a multiple award-winning executive producer of his own media company. And, you know, he knows how you bring jobs in, and he's used that. He's used that ability and that executive ability he's got, as well as his influence to help bring more jobs into Alabama. You know, that to me is the key to it. It's the key to all of it. If our current commander-in-chief understood how to bring jobs to a state, he would have a totally different philosophy in life. I firmly believe that. I'm not going to go a whole lot into detail, but I do, Jonathan, I want to welcome you. We are so glad you're here. I want you to just give us a quick rundown, a quick bio of your experience and the things you've done. You've been the press secretary for the Republican Party there in Alabama. We've had you on the show before, and we had an awesome discussion that night. We talked a little bit of everything, and I'm really excited personally on a personal level to be able to, and I guarantee you every little bit I'm going to be able to do. You got it until the end of the last hour and a half, you know. We're going to run right there with you. But welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I'm going to go in after you're done with that. I want to talk a little bit about what a public service commissioner is. Jonathan's running for the public service commissioner job there in Alabama, and his website is BARBEEPSC.com. So everybody, if you're listening, open that up while we're doing the show and explore a little bit. If you can do it, send a little bit of money. Serious. I hate asking for money, but I'll ask for it for Jonathan. It takes money to do this. I hate that. I wish it didn't. But we proved with certain candidates that a little bit of money goes a long way. And I'm a firm believer. I'm fully confident that Jonathan's campaign is going to handle this money in a very, very responsible way. So I'm going to encourage you to donate. I'm going to encourage you to go to his Twitter account. You can find them all at his website. Go to his Facebook. Go to his Twitter. Help him tweet. Help him. Let's give him some help. Let's give some national attention, giving some local love to Alabama through this one. Jonathan, welcome. It is so good to have you.
Well, Scott, thank you, and I want to thank everybody for having me on tonight. I don't know how I can follow all of your great praises. I am so honored to have great friends that think so highly of me and have put their faith in me. And just, you know, the respect that I feel from this group is amazing. And I love y'all's show and the issues that you cover with Common Core and parenting. I think it's so important in our country right now. And I'm just honored to be here and for the great introduction. I truly am. It was funny, you were mentioning the commander-in-chief, you know, doing jobs. If you go to my campaign website on the contribute page, and I'm not trying to ask for money, but you see the latest ad we did that's got a picture of Obama, and out next to him, all it says is job killer, because I believe he is the official job killer. You know, he touted in his election that he was going to help our country with jobs. Well, all he did was use our tax dollars to put people to work for 2 or 3 months so that they could, you know, bring the jobless rate down for 3 months, and then those projects went to the wayside, and those people were back without a job again, but then they reported the positive numbers. So it's all a dog and pony show. So I appreciate what you said earlier. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a small business owner here in Alabama. I have a production company. I started it when I was 16 years old, and I'm 34 now, so going on 18 years I've been in the media business. And I have seen it all. I've been there, done that. I've enjoyed it. I've had my time in California working on movie sets, from Nashville working on good old country music. You know, I say good old country music because usually it's conservative and it's something good we have out there. I was Tanya Tucker's producer for a little while, working on her TV show. Worked with a lot of different folks. But then at the same time, I also loved to dabble in politics while I was in Alabama. And I love living here in Alabama. Our state is so rich in politics and things that we do. And just politics is crazy here. I've always heard, if you want to see how a national election is going to go, how dirty it's going to get, they say to watch two states, and that's Virginia and Alabama. So I think that's always pretty interesting. But small business owner, and I'm running for the PSC because I just see the things that are happening to our great state, and it's bleeding throughout the nation. So I decided to jump in this race. My grandfather was a builder and a cattle farmer. At the same time, he worked two jobs. My mom was a school teacher, and while she was teaching school, she went to law school. She taught school for 35 years, so while she was raising me and my teens, she was going to law school at night. My dad also worked two jobs. He was a contractor, and then he also helped my grandfather with the farm. So I grew up learning the value of hard work. Parents that worked two jobs, I'd have to stay with my grandmother and my great-grandmother sometimes because they both worked late. And I saw that value of hard work, and I have put that same value of hard work into my daily life. And also, you know, I have a great walk with God. I became a Christian when I was a young age and then rededicated my life about 7 or 8 years ago and really said, you know, Lord, I'm going to work to do things unto you. And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I'm not afraid to say that to people. And I'm not afraid to stand up for what I believe in. And that's just the kind of person I am. So I saw the things that were happening in the state, and I said, you know what? I want to run for office. I want to represent people. I want to take the values that I learned as a child and starting my own business at the age of 16 and building it up to where it is now, and I want to put that to helping the people of Alabama. And I served the last legislative session here in Alabama as the press secretary. I was the interim press secretary. So we did a lot of great things during the last legislative session, and I was responsible for doing the press releases and basically attacking the liberal Democrats. I did a great job. The former chairman of the Democratic Party, Judge Mark Kennedy here in Alabama, had quoted to somebody at a luncheon one day, this Barbie guy is going to be the end of our party. And sure enough, it wasn't just me, but about 2 months after that, the Alabama Democratic Party went bankrupt, and they're now in $500,000 of debt because along with myself and legislators and hard-working Republicans here in Alabama, we defunded the Democratic Party, somewhat like we need to do with Obamacare. So that's a little bit about me and who I am and what I stand for and what I believe in. So I'm going to put it back to you, Scott.
Well, and Jonathan, the next thing I want to pass at you, and then we'll pass you around the room. Anybody that listens to my blog talk knows I have a philosophy. This is like a giant living room. And we're all sitting on couches, all having a conversation. So I want to ask you this, and then we'll pass you around. We'll start with Jennifer and Stacy down there in Alabama. And we've got Dan back. We'll bring it to Dan, and we'll let Rodney do the closeout with you. And we'll just continue to do that roundtable throughout the evening and discuss different issues. One thing that I do want to ask you, what does the Public Service Commissioner do? You know, when Rodney ran for the vice chair of the California Republican Party, I had to look up, okay, exactly what do they do? We don't often understand, I believe, some of these local races. We don't, you know, I think most of the people don't even realize they're really going on until they get to a name on a ballot for some position. You know, I don't know any of those people. I know who Mitt Romney is. But what is Public Service Commissioner? What does it do? And, you know, you're specifically suited for this job, I believe. You've got executive experience. You've got a lot of executive experience. And you also have the basic understanding of how to make economy grow. You've got the experience in that. So kind of let us know what a Public Service Commissioner does there in Alabama, and then we'll pass it around, starting out with Jennifer.
Well, I'll tell you what a public service, and this is a good question, Scott. We were at a forum on Thursday night, and Jennifer was actually there. Three of the four candidates were there who are running in this race, and no one brought up what a Public Service Commissioner does until I did. And the audience, you know, after I explained it, people were sitting there going, shaking their head, going, oh, yeah, okay, I understand. Public Service Commissioner in Alabama originally started out as the Railroad Commissioner. So in Alabama, they were responsible for railroad safety, railroad development. Well, then it migrated and morphed into something else. You know, utilities, back in the day were beginning to get out of control in every state across America. So many states put in a regulatory board to control the utility rates for two reasons. One, to make sure that consumers weren't paying ridiculous prices, and two, to make sure that utility companies could stay in business and provide consumers with power and water and gas. Because, you know, if they didn't stay in business, you know, obviously some of us would be sitting in the dark. So it was very important to allow utility companies to stay in business and make a decent profit and keep their infrastructure going, but also so that they wouldn't charge the consumers outrageous monopolizing rates. So they decided to change the Public Service Commission in Alabama to a commission that not only regulates railroads, but also does utilities. And then it further went on into transportation safety, like 18-wheelers, taxi cabs, public transportation, airports, the Public Service Commission. So not only do we regulate utilities, and we have hearings on utility rates, and that can be gas, water, power. And we have one area of Alabama that's the federal government, is TVA. They're not regulated by the Public Service Commission. But railroads are. We have hearing on railroads and railroad safety. And then airplane safety, airport safety. Those companies have to register with us to make sure we have all the required permits, like insurance. Basically, we're there to protect the consumers in public safety. And it's a very important job, but a lot of people don't realize, they just think utility rates, and they leave off the fact that, hey, we're railroads at the Public Service Commission. You know, we also do public transportation safety. That 18-wheeler that flew by you, we have to make sure that their permits are in check, that they have their insurance, and that their vehicle is safe to be on the highway. One thing people don't realize is we have a law enforcement division, Public Safety Commission, where there are folks just like state troopers. They're not out to write you tickets. They're out to make sure that your vehicles are safe. They're out to make sure that weights and measurements are safe on the 18-wheelers. They're out to make sure that proper signage is posted in airports and proper safety measures are met. And one thing that recently happened in the last legislative session is the Public Service Commission took on human trafficking awareness. So they've now taken on human trafficking, which people don't realize in Alabama has become very big. We are a hub because we have the Bay, and then we have direct routes 20 through Texas all the way to Mexico. So what the PSC, and they're just now trying to figure out how they're going to regulate this, but what they're charged with doing is putting up public notices in these taxi cabs, buses, airports, bus stations that will give a 1-800 number for people to call about information or to report something that they think is suspicious, or to even give people clues of what a human trafficking victim may look like. So it's a broad spectrum of things that we do here in Alabama. It's a very important job. It is a full-time job. But I think that it's important for the people of Alabama, and a lot of people are like, well, you have your own business. Well, you know what I do, and it's going well, and I have a couple of business partners, and I talked to them before I decided to do this, and I said, you know, people need leadership. We have some things happening in our Public Service Commission right now where the EPA are coming down on Alabama. They're coming down on every state in the country, but they are coming down on our coal industry in Alabama, which is responsible for over 5,000 jobs, and it's responsible for over 64% of our energy. So you can imagine if we have to cut coal production, how high utility rates could get and how many jobless families and homeless families there could be across the state. So I saw this happening. I saw the EPA coming into the Public Service Commission with their liberal agenda, and I said, somebody's got to stand up and fight. And in this state, it's very strange that, you know, a lot of folks don't understand media, and I do. And I know that the Democrats have won their races through their media and through their propaganda. And if we don't stand up and fight them with the facts and get it out there to the public and educate the public, then, you know, we're doomed. They will continue to win, and they will continue to have their issues go through, much like Common Core. People didn't pay attention to what it was. Republicans didn't know enough to come out with the facts about it. They didn't know enough to fight it. They didn't bring enough awareness to it. So folks like y'all and the Tea Parties have had to jump on board at the very last minute to try to do it. I don't want to see that happening in our Public Service Commission, and I don't want to see people losing jobs. So that's what the PSC does.
Thank you. I am a whole lot clearer. And, you know, it's so important. I believe it's an important concept that we encourage people to find out what some of these local positions are. You know, what are the parts, what are the elected positions in the party leadership? What are the elected positions in the county? Right now, I know that the school board, people should be really paying attention to their school board elections right now. There are discussions and fights going on in school boards all over the country right now about Common Core, and that's important. I'm going to pass it around the table for questions for Jonathan on how he's going to accomplish what he wants to accomplish or anything else along those lines. We'll pass it first to Jennifer Montrose. Jennifer, I've been telling you a long time, Alabama's rocking. You should move there. Oh, you're right in the middle of it, aren't you? You're working hard. Jennifer, pass it to you.
Well, I just, you know, some people, I think, say that Terry Dunn has been misunderstood. You know, I sometimes think
that is my opponent. Terry Dunn is my opponent, for those of you that know.
Yeah, Terry Dunn is the current incumbent. And, you know, one of the things I think that is very important is for voters to be well informed, you know, because if not, you know, you've got candidates that will come out there and say whatever they want to. And one of the things I think that has been key with that I like about Jonathan is he makes no bones about it, you know, about what he stands for, what he believes in. And, you know, he gets direct and to the point. So if there was any one thing that you could say out there to the voters of Alabama in reference to what you're going to do to help change things with Public Service Commissioner to raise more awareness, because I think a lot of people are like, huh, what is this? You know, and this is not like school board. You know, it's not like, you know, what we know that senators do and county commissioners might be involved with. But I know I was involved with helping with this PFC race last year to a small degree, you know, when Kathy Peterson was running. And so I just, you know, I want to hear some of the things that if there was any real key highlight points that you want to share to your voters out there, what would those be?
Well, I tell you, Jennifer, that's a great question, and I think you heard me touch on this the other night a little bit. I think the number one thing that the PSC needs to do in regards to the public is to educate them to what the Public Service Commission is and why it's important. A lot of folks, you know, the other night were, we don't know what the Public Service Commission is. I said, you know why? Because it hasn't truly affected your pocketbook until this year. And now it's going to start affecting your pocketbook, so that's when people sort of look up and go, wait a minute, it's going to start costing me more money. Here's the deal. We need to educate people about the Public Service Commission, and we need to communicate with people about the Public Service Commission, and we need to have a plan to stand firm in what we believe in and protecting our consumers and protecting our jobs in Alabama and even protecting our utility companies from Obama's overreach, because he's trying to shut a lot of them down. And here's the thing. We have to take the PSC office, and we need to beef up the communications. We need to make it better. We need a press office of the Public Service Commission. They currently do not have one. And I don't mean we need to hire 20 employees. That's not what I'm saying. We don't need to cost the taxpayers any more money. We need to make one of those three assistants that each commissioner has, we need to make a couple of them press people. And then we need to beef up the website and be able to communicate with the public more. When they need to file complaints with us, they need to be able to file a complaint online. When we need to talk to people, we need to be able to do it online. Currently, their website does not function like it should. So there's a lot of things that need to be changed in the Public Service Commission office just on the media side of it. On the policy side of things, we have to stand firm in our policies that we're not going to have formal hearings. And that's what's going on right now. People are like, well, what's wrong with formal hearings? You know, then the power company has to come in and tell you how they do their rates, and then the gas companies have to come in and tell you how they do their rates. Well, they tell us anyway. They tell the public service commissioners anyway, and they tell the public anyway. They have informal hearings that anyone is welcome to go to and attend. And people say, why shouldn't we have formal hearings? Here's what happens if you have a formal hearing, and it's exactly what the issue is right now with the current incumbent in this spot. He wants to have formal hearings. When you do that, you open up Pandora's box. When you open up Pandora's box and you have a formal hearing, then that means the environmentalists, Obama's cronies, his crew, I like to call him his crew, he gets to send down whoever he wants. They get to have an attorney. They get to have a say in the public hearing. They get to read all of their propaganda. They get to make it last as long as they want. If they want to hold the floor for several days, they can hold the floor for several days, because we have to go by public hearing standards just like it works in a court. The commissioners have to hear everyone. Everybody gets a lawyer. They get to have their side. Well, once you do that, you've opened up the door for the liberal environmental activists to come in and begin their propaganda, to get an office in Montgomery, to pound the Public Service Commission daily, to pound the coal industry daily, to pound the energy companies daily. And you open a Pandora's box, and it never stops. So that's one thing we have to do, is stand strong on our policy that we're going to have informal hearings until the absolute last second that any commissioner thinks that there needs to be something formal with a utility company. Because if we open it up formal, like I said, we open the door. So those are a couple things that need to be done in the Public Service Commissioner's office. Another thing to help save jobs is we need industrial development. We need a Public Service Commissioner who will market our state to manufacturing companies, who will market our state to businesses and say, look, our doors are open for small businesses. You come see us, because our utility rates are some of the lowest in the United States. Come and open, come and bring your business here. Come and hire some employees. Manufacturing. It goes hand in hand with low utility rates and railroads, and that's something that the Public Service Commissioner's office directly oversees. If you can't build a Mercedes plant like we have in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is one of the headquarters for the Mercedes M-Class, they build them all in Tuscaloosa, you couldn't have that plant if utility rates were triple anywhere else in the United States. You couldn't have that plant if we didn't have a railroad that ran right through the factory, literally, to drop the parts off and to put the cars on when they're shipping them out. These are important things for jobs in Alabama. If we lose the coal industry, we lose over 5,000 jobs, and then the consumers have to take up the price with the utilities, and it's going to cost everybody a lot more money. So we have to put a plan together to protect Alabama, to stand strong, to tell the EPA to get out of Alabama, take their environmental cronies and go. And we need to also do that through some litigation as well. If we have to sue the EPA in court, then we need to do that. There's just many things that have got to be done to stand strong, and those are just a few of them. And that's what I plan to do if I'm elected.
We'll pass it on down to Stacy.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on tonight. It's always amazing to hear your view on things. I just want to throw out there that when Jonathan was giving his intro, he talked about his mom being a teacher and working hard for his family. Well, Jonathan's mom was my teacher in middle school, and I met Ted Cruz's dad at a town hall meeting, and, you know, we had a discussion one night about how you can tell the heart of someone by their parents and the way they're raised, and people always tend to go back to their core, and that would be from their childhood and the way they were brought up. And knowing Miss Barbie from the way that she taught and her strict ways and how fun she was, I have every bit of confidence that Jonathan has been raised with integrity. I don't really know how else to say it, but that she is an amazing person, and all of us being on Parental Sovereignty Radio care about parenting, and I believe that she did it right. So that's my two cents there. Now, Jonathan, at a meeting I was at this weekend, your name actually came up, and the discussion was brought about y'all's debate that I missed somehow, and everyone talked about how wonderful all the candidates did in that they didn't turn an attack on each other, that everyone stuck to their beliefs and their points and refused to let it turn into a shouting match. excuse me. I still have trouble understanding all of the issues and the problems that are happening today with the incumbent. And I know that you're not one to attack, but I'm wondering if you might want to take the opportunity to address things that you might feel like you could do better. I know you've touched on a couple of them, but I'm just opening the floor to you to do that if you want to.
Well, thank you for the kind words, first of all, Stacey, and thank you for the things you said about my mom. She is a wonderful lady, and I owe my mom and dad a lot for me. My character, my values. And you're a good mom with all your children running around and all the things that you do. truly. And you always keep this common core fight going. And I follow you on Facebook every day to see what's going on. And you're definitely keeping the fight going. I guess I will say this. I'm not one to really to talk bad about people, but I will state the facts. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with stating the facts. We do it every day on our president. We do it every day with some of our senators and representatives. Let's talk about the facts. The gentleman who is the current incumbent, his name is Terry Dunn. Mr. Dunn is a fine gentleman. I've met him several times at state meetings. Here is the main issue that we have with Mr. Dunn. And I say we, that's the whole state. He has a very liberal Democratic staff. That's number one. His chief of staff is a Democrat. And is a green-powered Democrat, believes in the environment, and he is the one who has sort of pushed the formal hearings and has been pushing the Green Energy Initiative. Mr. Dunn also does not come to meetings. He wasn't at the debate. I have not seen him in 3 months at any meeting. None of us have. He doesn't engage the public, but he daily puts stuff out saying, I'm trying to protect the consumers, I'm trying to protect the consumers, because he wants the formal hearings. If he were truly trying to protect the consumers, in my opinion, he would be out talking to them every day, and he would be trying to explain his agenda better than what he's done. I know his agenda. He's worried that the power company is overcharging people. Be that that it may, I know that we have some of the lowest rates in the country, and even through the economic crisis, our power company didn't have to take our rates up, whereas most power companies in the United States had to do that because they did not plan for the future. I know that, all of our utility companies in Alabama planned for economic crisis. Mr. Dunn never went to any of the utility companies and sat down with them and said, hey, let's talk about this. You know, we need to make sure we're in line with protecting consumers and protecting the people of Alabama. He just all of a sudden started putting on a show in Montgomery and sending out press releases and calling for formal hearings. It was almost seemed like a stunt. And to the tune of that, it's a waste of taxpayers' money on top of that. I mean, to do formal hearings is a lot of money. I mean, we're talking the tune of $50,000 to $100,000, however many weeks it lasts. So that is the issue that I have with the current incumbent. And that's why I stepped into this race. As I see the things that are going on, plus if the environmentalists come through his position and they're able to take a stand through him and his staff, it may not even necessarily be him, but the people you surround yourself with play a big role in anything you do, whether it be a company, whether it be a friendship, whether it be a relationship, or whether it be public office. The people you surround yourself with are important. And if you surround yourself with liberal Democrats and people with an agenda, like Obama's agenda, and I will bash Obama all night long just so everybody knows. When you have a staff who embraces Obama's agenda, that's when I began to worry, and a lot of us here in Alabama did, because if he'll have a staff that embraces that agenda and can have influence over him, then you can't trust his decisions. And so that's a little bit about what's going on. And the whole Pandora's box thing, if you have a formal hearing, you've invited them in. You know, people talk about spiritual things that if you do Ouija boards or you do any type of occult thing like that, you're inviting spirits in. Well, I'm a true believer. If you open up the door to invite the environmentalists in, they're going to come, and they're never going to leave. And so that's a little bit, Stacey. Hope that answers your question just a little bit.
Absolutely. I don't think I could have imagined a more perfect answer. I didn't mean for it to seem like I was setting you up to attack your opponent. I just was genuinely curious because, like we talked about in the beginning, about how PSC is such a local thing and so few people know what it's about, it's hard to really understand, okay, what's going on. But in the political climate that we have in the country today, I struggle to trust my friends who are Democrats. Like, so trusting a politician, trust people who boldly support Obama and his policies, it's no brainer for me. Anyhow, I'm going to pass it to Rodney. Rodney?
Let's pass it on to Dan. Dan, you there?
Okay. Yep, I'm here. I apologize for being late. We had a power outage during a thunderstorm, so took me a little while to get back on. And when you were speaking about energy, I heard something over the weekend that was kind of interesting about all these people pushing green energy. And they brought up the wind generators. Last year, wind generators killed over 30,000 raptors, like bald eagles, golden eagles, falcons, et cetera, et cetera. And countless numbers of migratory birds. So this great, wonderful energy is proving to be a real good killer of fowls in the country. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you, John, is how do we get our politicians to get more involved? I mean, for instance, in Congress, you know, the last 5 years, we hear a little grump here and a little grump there, and then they just kind of push whatever it is under the table and then forget about it. Now, how do the people get the Congress to, instead of shuffling it under the rug, how do we get them to pull it out and start facing these problems? We're having it on a federal basis. I mean, I can go for 2 hours mentioning events, you know, Solyndra, Fast and Furious, IRS.
Those are very common things. They are. Well, to answer your question, I'm going to make this like a two-part answer because you brought up two issues. One, the wind turbines and this green energy initiative, and I'm going to tell you the secrets behind that. And the other major reason that I'm running for public service commissioner. And then I'm going to address the congressional and Senate part of it. I'll say this to you, and it's something we've all heard in a movie, but it's called Show Me the Money, okay? And congressmen and senators are being wooed by a lot of these energy corporations, a lot of these green energy corporations, and a lot of other special interest groups. And lots of donations are being made. So what I encourage people to do is to find out the facts, find out the truth, and rally behind the truth. Because if you go check the financial reports of all these candidates, you can see who gives them money. You can see if it's major corporations have given them thousands of dollars. You can see if major PACs, liberal political action committees, have given them thousands of dollars. Or you can see if it's a business owner that gave them $500, or maybe a medium-sized business that gave them $5,000 and said, hey, we believe in what you're doing, or individuals. You can see the kind of fundraiser that they are and where their special interests lie. And the way to do it is to find out the facts. If you want a candidate out of there, rally to find a new one, rally behind them, and grassroots it, and try to raise money the old-fashioned way. it's on conservative PACs that you can get money from. And I just think if everybody were to get more involved and check the facts, then people could start understanding how Congress works and how the Senate works and how a lot of our local political offices, you know, state representatives and state senators work. And unfortunately, that is the way that it works. And I'm not going to say that about every candidate, because there are some good candidates who stand strong for what they believe in out there. I'm going to give you a for instance on a couple of things. Speaking on this green energy, here's how it works. And people, it's hard to put it together. And I put it together the other night, and people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I hadn't figured that out. The folks, George Soros is behind a lot of this green energy, and we know that he's a very wealthy liberal man who pushed Obama to get into office. There's also a lot of other groups that are behind these green, and I'm not going to mention names at this moment, but there's a lot of companies that have gone out of business, solar energy companies that took billions of our tax dollars, federal money, to go into business to put solar panels in. But they were so expensive because they're hard to install, they're hard to maintain, they don't have a great life expectancy, but the price was so high. They're doing the same thing with wind turbines. That is the new renewable energy. Well, let me tell you how it works. Friday, Obama signed an executive order to take carbon monoxide out of the coal factories who provide power. They're currently running at 1,800 parts per million of CO2, which is, you know, very, very little. He's now dropped it down to 1,200 parts per million in new plants and 1,500 parts per million in older plants. That's going to do two things. It's going to decrease coal production for plants that can't afford to put new scrubbers in and new technology in. They're going to have to decrease their coal production so that they can meet that federal EPA standard. Number two, in order to do that, they're going to have to lay some people off, so we're going to lose jobs. Or a company is going to buy the new technology, put it in so that they can meet those standards, and they're going to have to raise their prices to the energy companies, to the utility companies who buy the power. Or they're going to have to lay employees off to pay for the new technology. So that's why I call Obama the job killer. Just Friday he signed that legislation. Well, people say, well, what's the big deal about taking the coal down? We all want to protect the environment. Yes, back in 2004, things went into effect to protect our environment, and our ozone began rebuilding itself. And people in California know about what happens when you take coal production down. You have brownouts that last 4 or 5 days. Utility rates skyrocket, and they don't go back down once they skyrocket, because they enacted this in California on a state level, that they would stop the coal production because pollution was out of control. Well, instead of stopping the pollution in people's old cars and the 18-wheelers and ridiculous ways that we have pollution, they went after the coal manufacturers, and people in California paid for it, and today they're still paying for it. So you say, well, why is Obama on this kick right now? Here's why he's on the kick. He passed a subsidy to subsidize these green wind turbines going into communities all across America. Where they're trying to do it in Alabama, up in the most beautiful part of the state, in Shenbone Ridge and up on Mentone Mountain and Sandrock Mountain up in northeast Alabama. They're trying to bring this into a community where they make a good portion of their living off resorts, lakes, and the mountaintops. People hike the mountains. People go through the mountains. They want to put 8 wind turbines on top of the mountain, okay? And they will be the tallest in the United States of America, the second tallest one in the world. And I say this, it's not just about the beauty. They will destroy the beauty of this gracious area that I grew up traveling to. But also, we don't have that much wind in Alabama. So people are like, why are they doing this? I mean, you can go up there yourself and tell that there's not that much wind. They're like, why are they doing this? I'll tell you why they're doing this. They're doing it because the company who just started in Dallas, Texas, has never installed these wind turbines before. They've tried in 2 other states and failed. So now they've come to Alabama. They're going to do a $350, $400 million project, and Obama and the government and his cronies are going to pay them back 70% of their investment. That means that every tax dollar that we spend, this company is going to get 70% $0.70 on the dollar to put these wind turbines in. So let's say, let's just say, for instance, they spend $100 million installing the first, you know, 25 or 30 of them. They're going to get $70 million back on their investment, which means that in a couple of years they can make the rest of their investment off. It's all about using our tax money to install this, and these companies are making a fortune profit off the backs of the consumers. And Obama is the man behind it. The guy who started this wind turbine company out in Texas that wants to install these in Alabama went to Obama's personal birthday party, and they donated a lot of money to his last campaign. So you ask, why are they reducing coal? It's not about the environment. They're reducing coal so that we have to have other power initiatives. In states like Alabama, you reduce coal, our coal production will drop to 40%. Where are we going to find that other 24% of our power? We're not going to find it in wind turbines, but these companies want to make you think that we'll find it in the wind turbines so that they can go make $500 million off the backs of the consumers. So the consumers get it twice in the rear end. They get it on one butt cheek, paying out of their wallet for high utility rates since coal production's been cut down, and then they get it on their other butt cheek when they write the check to Uncle Sam every year and their tax dollars are subsidizing these green energy initiatives that just don't work. So I hope that that can answer your question. That is a vicious cycle that's going on right now, and it's also the other reason I stepped up to run for Public Service Commission. Somebody's got to stop it.
I agree. Solyndra, everybody knew that Solyndra was a money pit. I mean, the Bush administration had turned down their request for a loan just 2 years before. Obama throws out, what was it, $500 million?
Yep.
And within 6 months, it was gone, along with the company. So
that's right. And the same thing is going to happen to the green energy companies. They're going to get all their investments back. Our energy rate's going to be skyrocketed because, let's face it, wind energy is not sustainable. It's not a sustainable product. We have enough coal to go for another 150, 200 years at the current rate that we're doing it at. So we just have to face the fact. This is all about the bottom dollar and these companies making money.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Oh,
hey, Jonathan, it's going to be exciting to watch this because I'm a firm believer that you'll always go back to basics and explain these things to people. You know, the left follows a pattern. They've got a method. And, you know, our government cannot micromanage. We know that. Yet, many of the solutions that are put out there from the left, they're non-transparent. And they are because they don't solve the problem stated. Now, we know with Solyndra, like Dan just mentioned, we'll find out. If they go through and continue on this path, we know we're going to have a bunch of wind turbines that are sitting there not being used because the company's going to go bankrupt.
That's right.
Common Core. Obamacare, they're all put together the same way. They're a solution, but they don't solve the stated problem. Obamacare doesn't solve the stated problem. You don't uproot the entire health care system of the United States, the entire insurance system of the United States, to deal with insuring a small portion, actually, in the percentage of our country, of 40 million people. Obamacare wasn't designed to make sure everybody had health insurance. We're finding that out real quick. Common Core the same way, and I want to shift our discussion a little bit to Common Core and families and everything that goes along with that. A good friend, Teresa Bresky in Minnesota, broke me some news, and you guys are going to be very excited about this. It seems that Florida has just kicked out Common Core.
Yes. It was on the news today.
I just put you down there. I want to read this real quick, a little bit of it. In a stunning move, Florida Governor Rick Scott removed the state of California from the Common Core Consortium, known as the Partnership for Assessing Readiness for College and Career. This consortium is comprised of states such as New York, New Jersey, Arizona, New Mexico, Illinois, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee.
So that is some awesome news. We will hear about that further, I am sure. But I want to pass it this way, Jonathan, and I'll give this to you, and then we'll pass it around the room again. Of course, this is Parental Sovereignty Radio. We talk a lot about Common Core. We've had discussions with you on Common Core in the past. Common Core follows this exact same pattern. It's a very huge, complex, non-transparent solution to what's supposed to be a very simple goal. It erodes parental sovereignty. The whole thing was done in secret. All the way down to the school board, they worked really, really hard to keep the parents from even knowing this is happening. It was done in bribery. It was done in deceit. The costs are exorbitant, and they were, the states are getting caught with it. The big thing is included in this minimum, so-called minimum curriculum that they want to make each state, they want to include a certain worldview on the Second Amendment, on the First Amendment, on morality, on God, on all kinds of subjects that they want to force in to our school systems. And, man, it's the biggest insanity I've seen in a long time. It scares me more than Obamacare does, and Obamacare scares me. You know, at least when I'm old, if I don't have the best of health care, that's okay. I know where I'm going. But you know what? If we don't have good schools, I've got three nieces that plan on having children someday. And so that bothers me. It bothers me huge. And this is great. This is huge news. We want to thank Teresa, my buddy, good buddy. I love you, Teresa. You have been a great, great friend for quite a few years now. And she sent that to me, and you should have seen me jump up out of my chair, ran in and told my sister what had happened and shared that information with her. This is exciting news. I believe that each state's got the ability. And I'm going to say it again, Jonathan. I believe Alabama is working harder than anybody to try and accomplish this task. So I want to pass it to you for your comments on Common Core, your objections to it, the way you go about it, and then we'll pass it on back around the roundtable.
I tell you, Scott, it's like when we talked about the first time I came on the show. All Common Core is a tool for propaganda, for the liberal agenda, and that's what it is. You know, a lot of people don't understand, okay, well, how does propaganda affect us? Well, propaganda is very effective in children, very effective in these young minds. When you are teaching them things, I read something the other day where South Carolina was using a history book that didn't even have the Second Amendment printed right in it, and it was accepted and passed by that state's Common Core initiative group. And those are the kinds of things that make our children impressionable. And Common Core is a way to data mine parents and children to find out everything they need to know about the home. It opens the door to ask questions like, do you have any weapons in the home, which infringes on our Second Amendment. Common Core infringes on all of our rights, on every right that we have under the Constitution of the United States. Somehow Common Core affects it, in my opinion. You know, if you're putting something standardized across the United States and a liberal president and a liberal education group is putting this out, it's easy for them to say in it what they want to say, especially when the law back from the 1950s banning propaganda in the United States was repealed over the summer. The United States can now produce propaganda. That's what they've been using for Obamacare. Is propaganda, since that's why they repealed the law, so that they could do propaganda. Now they're going to be using that in Common Core to feed propaganda through our children so that they brainwash our children and then they come home and parents have to, like Stacy, for instance, she's having to constantly fight something with Common Core. I follow her on Facebook, and they're constantly doing something with Common Core, including hours worth of hours of homework on this repetitive stuff where they're teaching you math and it's got to be their way. You can't learn it a different way. And I just think Common Core opens the door. It's another Pandora's box. Once you accept it and take it in, you begin it, you've opened Pandora's box to allow the chain of propaganda to come all the way through the children and into the home. And I think it's one of the worst things we have in America. And I'm commending Florida. I was going to mention that to you today because I was following that. I commend Florida for taking the right steps. I mean, you know, I know that they're pushing the testing out. Well, that's the right step. At least they're doing that. And if other states could break it down little by little to just get rid of it, I think we'd all be in better shape. I know in Alabama, you know, we're catching a little flack. So we've got a few senators and representatives who don't understand it or who have been bought into the propaganda. And, in fact, I want to say this. Some of those senators and representatives who are supporting it are not originally from Alabama. They're from northern states, and they moved down here. And they're from states where they've always done standardized-type stuff, and they weren't the most conservative states. So you sort of have to look at a person's background with that. You know, we're fighting Common Core. When I was press secretary, we fought Common Core. We did weekly press releases about it, biweekly, sometimes twice a week, on how damaging Common Core could be. And we have a great group of people down here, like Stacy and Jennifer and Alois Zena, and a lot of folks who fight Common Core, and they're not going to give up. People think they're just going to hush and walk away, but they're not. They're going to keep fighting it until it's over with. Or the only other alternative we're going to have is to put your kids in a private school that doesn't accept the standards, or you're going to have to homeschool. But you know what? That's coming. And if our government doesn't watch out, there won't be an official public education system because parents are going to take it into their own hands. And if that's what has to happen, let's call it the Common Core Revolution. Count me in.
Exactly. Exactly. And, boy, I do. I have to, one more time, I'm going to say Alabama rocks. And you've been right in the middle of it, Jonathan, hugely in the middle of it and helped push it. And I believe it. We're going to be one of these nights. We're going to be talking about how Alabama pushed Common Core right over. You know, it's been quite a fight. I learned about Common Core a few months back, listening to Phyllis Schlafly interview Orlene Coley out here in California. And we got her on Conservatives Coast to Coast the very next couple of days, in fact. And she explained Common Core to us and explained the creator of Common Core. And I think that is a key to battling Common Core. We got to show the creators of Common Core and that group what their goals are. We know what their goals are. We talked a lot about Jason Markham and his ability to wear a Second Amendment shirt to school. And being arrested because he stood up for his rights and all kinds of insanity. These are the things that Common Core wants to institutionalize in our country. We've got examples over example. And the first thing we had was Cisco down in Texas. And you know, they've been really smart in putting together Common Core. They've made very, very sure that they didn't release any of the curriculum yet. It's amazing to me, the first thing that the student is going to see is the last thing that they're worried about putting together. But they know they don't want the American people to see it before they get Common Core institutionalized. But in Texas, you know, we had Common Core's little cousin, and it was finished. And we know what was in that curriculum there. And within 2 months, when Orlene Coley told us on the show only about 5% of the country knows about Common Core, within 2 months, C-Scope was pushed over for the most part. It's not completely over. There's still some roots down in there, but I believe we can get those out. But this is absolutely great news. Stacy, you fight hard on Common Core, and you had a post the other day that had like, I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was like 700 shares or 700 likes and 300-400 shares. I never saw anything like it. You've had some incredible discussion on your page. We had a great debate on one of the articles that you wrote. You know, Stacy, this is a huge, important fight. So I'm going to pass it to you to talk with Jonathan, and we'll pass it down to Jennifer after that. On to Dan, and I believe Rodney should be back with us. He had to take a break for a second. He's a multitasker. He's always doing two things at once because there's not enough time in the day to get accomplished what he needs to get accomplished. So hopefully by the time Dan's done, and we'll get back to Rodney. And so, Stacy, I pass it on down to you down there in Alabama.
Yeah, the last time I looked, which was several days ago, that post was creeping up on a couple thousand, but My posts on Facebook, which most of you know, I despise Facebook. To me, it's a necessary evil of spreading word, and I get on when I have to and get off. But my posts tend to spark debate, and they sometimes turn into just forum pages about Common Core, which I enjoy and welcome, obviously. But this one in particular, for over a year now, I've been talking about how fed up I am with sitting at home for hours and hours and going to bed crying myself, frustrated, and watching my daughter cry because of math. My daughter, who's in the gifted program, who's just brilliant, crying over simple third grade math problems. And so for second grade and then the beginning of third grade, I would post pictures of her math problems. And last week, I had enough, and I broke. And I realized that this tactic that the Democratic Party uses to feed off of emotions is something that's missing in this debate, is that this fight is a very emotional thing to families. There's anger, there's hurt, there's frustration, there's every piece of emotion you can imagine comes along with dealing with Common Core at home, whether you know it's called Common Core or not. And I decided to just up and be controversial and take a picture of my daughter crying because I see it 3, 4, 5 times a night or 5 times a week, my daughter crying over homework. And I feel like reaching people emotionally because they can't be reached through facts might be the way to go, because I've had it. Like, I can't do it anymore. Like, I'm trying to teach my kindergarten and first grader Common Core reading with nonsensical words, and there's a level of A through N or whatever, and you need to be on this level to be in first grade, and you need to do this and that, and then it's just, and then there's math, and let's group these, and if that does this, and let's do that, and then, okay, let's just learn how to read, and let's carry a one. Like, it's so frustrating to come home from 8-9 hours of work, get ready, go to the ballpark, be at the ballpark for 2 hours, come home, make dinner, feed my kids, sit down to do homework, and see that. And most parents in America are seeing it and have had enough. In fact, I was at the ballpark just last night helping Savannah with her math while my boys were playing football, and random mom just said, "Does your daughter go to this school?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, how do you feel about this new math?" So everybody is talking about it now. I've never seen a better time to capitalize on spreading the word of exactly how dangerous it is. I don't know if you guys saw the part where I also have opted out of that testing that Florida has decided to do all on its own, which is amazing. I can't believe Governor Bentley hasn't done that for us. But so I sent an opt-out letter saying my children are not to be tested. In less than 3 hours, it went from my daughter's backpack to the school board, and they were calling me, wanting to know what it was about. And then they tried to tell me that I couldn't opt out of the Common Core testing, that I had to have my children tested. And so it's just, like Jonathan said, a fight every single day without ceasing. The weekends are like rehab these days. Anyhow, I'll get off my soapbox and pass it on to Jennifer. Jennifer?
Hey, that was, I got a child in school, too, and I'm feeling it here. You know, report card grades coming home and the way they're scoring things, you know, and I have to question what's going on with that. But, I think that we need to, I want to say, you know, thanks, Jonathan, for stepping up to the plate, for being willing to be more than just someone sitting on Facebook complaining or talking about what needs to be done, but actually getting out there and deciding to step out there and actually do something. You know, I have a friend of mine whose husband works for Jim Walters, you know, and they're feeling it, that the stress is on, because they're cutting back jobs left and right. You know, coal is a definite natural resource. I really don't see what putting a windmill farm up in Mentone, Alabama, is going to accomplish anything but wasting taxpayers' money, you know, and I fully support what you're doing. I think we need to get more people out there to get, you know, they need to make some noise. You know, we need to do things. You know, I'm watching Ted Cruz,
And, you know, I commend him for taking a stand. You know, we need more people willing to get out there and fight this good fight. You know, this is our sovereignty. This is our United States. I was born and raised here. You know, for those who have fought the fight to become a citizen here, did not do it illegally, but came here, learned everything, I think, you know, we as Americans need to take a stand, you know, and I'm glad to see that we have someone that has those same conservative values. You know, we've talked about Frederick Douglass before, the values that he espoused as a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, and I think it's time that we, as Americans, we take the party, the Republican Party, we bring it back to those values that we once had back in the day of Douglass and Lincoln. And it's good to see that we have candidates out there that are fighting a good fight, that are standing up for those same things, that are not flip-flopping on the issues, you know. And for that, I commend you for being willing to take the heat, fight the good fight. You know, I was there with you when your mom was running for probate judge place 2. She fought a good fight. It was a great race. I hate it that the media propaganda and the liberal left, you know, as they typically do every year, they just go pull the donkey. They don't know anything about the candidate. If it has a D behind its name, then they vote for it. You know, and I think it's time that we as voters get more informed about what's going on out there in our communities, because if you want to complain, you need to get out there and vote. Make a difference. It does count. Get to know the candidates. Find out what they're about. Ask them. You know, if there's something you don't know about, then find out. You know, find out. We're not looking for people that are just giving us lip service. You know, this is, you know, we're dealing with things like Agenda 21 here in the state of Alabama. You know, we've had some serious issues with the tornadoes that have happened and ripped through the state. Many things that are going on, infrastructure and stuff. You know, and it's time that we had somebody that's not going to align themselves with these, you know, liberal environmental groups. It's going to take a stand and listen to what the people have to say. So thank you. Rodney?
Hey, sorry about that. Just been listening to Ted Cruz on hour number 8 and still going strong, and how much these liberals are just having an absolute fit trip. I got a question for you, Jonathan. I was looking over here at the your website and stuff like that, and I am so excited that you're running. What at this point, how many people are running?
Well, that's the incumbent is running for re-election. Of course, you wouldn't know it because he literally hasn't been out anywhere or hasn't raised any money whatsoever. All you hear from him are an email once or twice a week trying to explain himself in his position, but the email usually ends up being 10 to 12 pages and nobody wants to read it. So he's one person, and there's two other gentlemen that are running that both serve on the state executive committee. So it's a four-way race right now. So there definitely will probably be a runoff. I would like to think that there won't be, but there probably will be.
Cool. And what's the registration like back there in that district?
To registration? Well, it's a statewide race, and when we sign up to run the race, you know, you have to run in 67 counties, and it's a lot of territory to get through, but I'm gonna try to visit all 67 counties, even the Democratic ones, because they matter too, and just meet folks and go into businesses.
That's where I was confused, you know, as a commissioner and listening to what you say you're doing, it's like that, but in comparison to California, back there, y'all call it something different, you know. We call it city council, county supervisor, state assembly, governor, you know, and then you guys are talking and there's, you know, place 2 and commissioner and all these different things. So you're running statewide for a local election?
No, it is a statewide election. It's, you know, it's like the we cover all the state. We regulate the entire state. So it is a statewide election.
But a commissioner and judge are not the same thing, or the same thing?
No, a judge is different here. A judge is someone, you know, they have court, you know, criminal, civil. Then we have what's called a county commissioner on a local level, which is is the county version of like a city council person. They make decisions regarding the county, and then you have city council members, and then you have state representatives and state senators, and then you have different state commissioners. Like you have a commissioner of a Bureau of Indian Affairs. He's appointed by the governor. Then you have a railroad commissioner that's appointed by the governor. But then you have a regulatory board, which is voted on, and we're commissioners of the regulatory board, except our jurisdiction is the entire state. So from top to bottom, safety, you know, down in the shipping yards, up in Huntsville, you know, it's some of the hubs that Norfolk Southern has. So we oversee all of that. And then all the utility rates in the state, from gas, water, power, cable.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a big position. It's a very
large
position.
That's exciting, because I don't know if you're aware of out here in California where Scott and I are from, you know, we don't elect our commissioners. They're appointed as political favors, and we have 485 commissions that overlap each other. And for example, just in San Luis Obispo County is 27 overlapping commissions that deal with ocean, beaches, and waterfronts. And they're basically $100,000 a year jobs where you show up once a year and enact stupid stuff. But it is absolutely, and they're all appointed. If we could elect ours, it'd be a whole lot different story. And every single one of them make rules.
Those being appointed, I mean, that's when you talk about appointing commissioners here, I will say this, that most of the commissioners that are appointed in Alabama from the governor are not full-time positions, and if they are, they're basic salaried positions. You know, public service commissioner, you have to work every day. You don't just show up to a board meeting. I mean, we have to answer complaints, responses, meet with different organizations, meet on different councils. I mean, it's a full-time job. So, I mean, it's a well-earned, well-deserved job for the work you have to put into it. But that's the thing in California. I spent a year in California working, and I got to know the local politics. I got to know a lot about the energy initiative out there, because we opened an office out there, my company did, for a year, because we worked on a project out there. So I ended up paying for an apartment. I ended up paying for an office. I ended up paying double utility rates on everything. And it was, you know, we talked about keeping our office open out in California just because we loved Hollywood, but it was so expensive. It cost, here, we could run everything in a month, what it would cost in a week out there. I mean, so what we paid in a year in California because of the utility rates and a lot of the liberal agenda would probably last us 2 or 3 years here in Alabama. I mean, it was just that much doubled. I mean, just for a one-bedroom apartment, it was $1,800 a month, you know, plus the utilities on top of that. I mean, that's, you know, not something you see here in Alabama. And same with the business. The office building rent was like, you know, $4,000 a month for a small office building, and you know, utility rates are like $1,000 to $2,000 a month. I mean, it was just, we just could not do that. So I know firsthand a lot of what y'all have to go through in California, and you know, I pray for y'all, because y'all have to deal, you're a minority in a majority state that doesn't mind doing those appointed commissioners at $100,000, and people in California wonder where their tax money goes and why things are so upside down. I mean, you nailed it right on the head when you said that. You truly did.
Well, yeah. You know, plus, I mean, they can afford to pay those enormous rates for utilities because, like I said, you know, you guys actually have to work for a living as a commissioner. Out here, these guys get $100,000 a year jobs. They've got to meet like once a year, you know, maybe twice, and they don't work day to day. They do whatever they want, you know, so they're out boating with their friends or golfing or something. But, you know, it's all controlled by the lobbyists, and they're appointed as favors. And, you know, and then it's fun when you have, like I said, San Luis Obispo, 27 overlapping commissions. They each pass rules that, you know, cancel each other out. So actually nothing gets done, you know, so it's pretty pathetic. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and now the governor's assigned. Governor's, huh?
there's all, I was going to say there's only three commissioners on the Public Service Commission, and that's it. And you know, when it comes to safety, you know, we set the standards for the public transportation safety. I mean, it's you know, there's always areas of government that overlap, but there's got to be someone who actually has the final say, you know.
Oh, no, no, not here in California. You know, good example, Salt Lake Tahoe. I don't know if you're familiar with it up north by where I live. I'm about an hour from Tahoe. And
oh, yeah, love it's beautiful up there.
Yeah, well, they had Save Lake Tahoe because the water wasn't clear. It was getting kind of algae, and they created this whole commission that saved Lake Tahoe. And the first rule they implemented was stuff like, you know, you can't have windows without tinting to block the sun, and you can't paint your porch blue. It has to be gray. And, you know, all this stuff like that, and everyone's kind of going, the hell are you talking about? How's that saving Lake Tahoe? Well, come to figure out that Lake Tahoe goes through cycles, shocking, and it clears itself up over time, depending on the amount of water flow in the lake, and we had droughts. So now Nevada took it over, and they abolished, like, 121 laws or regulations in, like, one day, and reappointed all the commissioners. So it's going pretty good, but... It took Nevada getting involved, saying, "Hey, wait a minute, you guys are screwing up a lake, because you couldn't park your boat if you're, you know, if you just wanted to, you break a step and you got to go through like a 8-month process to what kind of wood you're going to use, and then you got to, you know, what kind of lights you're using, and it's like you got to be kidding me." So, anyway, I wish you luck, and I think it's awesome that you're running, because we need guys like you involved, you know. So, like I said at the beginning of the show, Scott knows. He likes to say, "I work so hard," but it's fun, you know. I don't know if Scott saw my Facebook. I got a candidate for state assembly and rushed down to Orange County the other night, got a rental car at 11 o'clock at night, drove all the way down, attended a meeting all day long for my candidate, and drove all the way back home. It was tiring.
Good for you. Good for you. I've worked on the other side of it where I've been a campaign manager and political consultant and media consultant. I've run a bunch of races. I actually ran a PSC race back in 2004 that actually was a big race. I mean, there ended up being about $400,000 or $500,000 spent for the election back in 2004. But I've been on your side working for candidates, and it is fun. It's fun when you work with different candidates and multiple candidates, and I commend you for what you're doing, because I know you're putting good people out there, and that's the key, is put the good people out there. Win or lose, put the good people out there. Eventually people will catch on. And I hope that California will catch on soon, because I love the state. It's a beautiful state. I just wish they would catch on, and they would catch on quick.
Yeah, well, it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's starting to swing our way. The Republican Party is starting to realize that we weren't kidding. You know, returning to the grassroots of the ground game. You know, we've been talking for weeks on this radio show, Go Local. You know, it's like I just had a discussion with someone today. How do we win the governor's race? You don't. You win school board, fire board, and water board, and you get out the vote. With that, you can win the governor's seat.
That's
you
right.
cannot, you
That's
know, Jim,
exactly.
our chairman of the Republican Party, Jim Brulte, put it in a speech the other day. He said, you know, people build my house. They didn't build it from the roof down to the foundation. They started the foundation and built up. So it's starting to sink in, but it's going to take a while. So, but good luck to you, and thank you, and I pass it back to Scott.
Great discussion, and, you know, important topic. You know, I know this isn't micromanagement and craziness on the part of legislation and commissions, but, you know, down at Disneyland, there's a clock on Main Street, and it takes three different unions to change the time at daylight savings time and non-daylight savings time. And, you know, California is really good at that, making a bunch of solutions and a bunch of organization and extra people that don't really accomplish anything. They just make more headaches, I think, when it all comes down to it. Dan, let's pass it on down to you, and then we'll go back up for a different course.
Okay, sounds good. The Common Core. I woke up this morning, and I heard what Rick Scott did, and what's funny about it is about 3 months ago, Rick Scott said how much he supported Common Core, And it was a group, a bunch of us who got together, and we spammed the hell out of him. We hit him with so many emails. I think it was over like 300,000 emails or whatever. And Scott realized if he wanted to get reelected, he better change his tune on Common Core. And what was funny is that the local media said it blamed it on the Republican Party, stating that they were against giving raises to teachers. And I wrote over to the local radio station, what Common Core was and why we were against it. And I know they won't, you know, it'll never reach the air, but the whole idea is that people are starting to wisen up, and to see Common Core hopefully go goodbye and go on the wayside would be wonderful. I mean, the more states that do this, the less power Obama will have. And we can piggyback this with Obamacare, because, I mean, Obamacare is, I don't know anybody who wants it, except for legislators. Because it's just going to be, it's an unsustainable program. I mean, there's no way they can afford to do it. And that's why Obama is putting all these programs off and, you know, delaying them for a year, which just so happens is against the Constitution. But Obama really never cared very much for the Constitution anyway. This is the thing that drives me nuts, is that we're seeing the Constitution being broken, all these laws being attached to our amendments, which is, again, against the Constitution. We're seeing violations in our Fourth Amendment, our Fifth Amendment, Second Amendment. You know, the war goes on and on and on. And Congress isn't doing a damn thing. And this is why I'm so furious. And what I've been doing is pushing for grassroots, you know, on the local level, in hopes that we can get people who do know what the heck they're talking about, and hopefully educate our citizens so they know what they're voting for. That's the biggest thing. Biggest problem I've seen is that the voting public doesn't know what they're voting for. You know, they believe the propaganda that the Democratic Party throws out. The Republican Party is notoriously quiet, and as a result, you know, the Republicans are made to be looked like the bad guys, and the Democrats are made to be looking like the good guys. They, every time something like, you know, the rich, they say tax them, tax them, tax them. And they don't understand every time you tax a person for every dollar you tax a person, you take a dollar out of the economy. So you weaken the economy. And people don't understand that. They also don't understand when they keep on saying tax corporations. They don't realize the 16 taxes drives up the price of the product, reduces the funds in the economy. It does a bunch of negative things, and we never recover from it. If we want to recover from it, from this depression, not recession, let's call it what it is, it's a depression, we got to lower taxes. We have no choice. We got to lower taxes. We got to lower these stupid regulations that Obama has instituted through the EPA. We got to get rid of the Federal Reserve and put them in part of the Treasury. The Federal Reserve has been artificially holding back the damn interest rate inflation for so many years. When the dam busts, it's going to go right through the ceiling. And people don't realize this. You know, all this crap you see, you know, this president's dwelling out, he's talking about 7 million new jobs. He's not talking about taking out West Virginia, taking out Eastern Ohio, Eastern Kentucky, Eastern Tennessee, you know, Northeastern Georgia, and how many millions of jobs he's lost right there. You know, we need honest conservative people out there. And right now we don't have that, so we got to start building from the ground and just try to stay afloat until we get some people in there that are halfway decent. Let me see. I'll pass it back over to Scott now.
Well, you know, it all ties together. You know, Jonathan, one of the things that I like the best about your website is the very first thing you do is you go after a liberal agenda, especially concerns the environment. I'm an environmentalist through and through. I love nature. I love creation. I don't ever have a biblical discussion that does not start with the creation and the intricacy of the creation. And I believe it's man's responsibility to take care of what he has. I believe it's an atrocious thing to sort of trash on the side of the road. And I believe that we should do our best to take care of our economy. However, I am far from being what you would actually call an environmentalist if you use the definition of what we normally use. And I believe there's a bunch of people that are environmentally conscious, and I think they believe that some of these solutions that are put forth and are passed are going to really help. I believe there's a group of people that believe that. But the leadership that puts these solutions together, no better. I know, Rodney, you deal with this hugely up there in your area, especially. California's dealing with a lot of problems. We've got a whole huge portion of our valley, which was the breadbasket of the world at one time, as dry as bones, because we're saving a little piece of bait up in Northern California, and they've shut down our water, and they're causing all kinds of insanity with it. I love Herman Cain because he said the best thing you could do for the EPA is put the people in charge of the EPA that have been hurt by the EPA. Out here in California, I got a good friend, John Miller.
It's where we hold ladies' Bible class every Friday. And John was the largest construction firm in Orange County, a good portion of Orange County at one time, a few decades back. Him and I talk a lot about the housing industry. And the things they are legislating that house has to have in order to meet EPA requirements and to meet local environmental requirements, they don't solve the problem. They're designed purposely a lot of time to give, like we've talked about Solyndra and we've talked about the windmills, to pass money around to worthless projects that don't help. They've also got a lot of things in there. They say it's because of safety, and it really doesn't accomplish the task. Now, I'm a firm believer. I want to make sure that the house that I buy meets the basic standard. I don't have a problem with that. I like the fact that when I go to hang the picture, I know the studs are 16 inches apart, and I can find my studs. You know, there's some basics that are important. But we have legislated and we have solutioned ourselves into a giant, giant mess. And Jonathan, you understand free market system. You understand jobs. You understand business. But you also have basic foundational understanding about how some of this, and we've talked about it already, some of this huge legislation, some of these solutions, so-called solutions, don't help the problem, but they make the problem worse. And I want to read this off of Jonathan's website because I very, very, very much like it. I will protect and defend Alabama families from the liberal environmental groups who are threatening our state with more regulation and rising utility costs. I will fight to secure Alabama's jobs and make sure small business can operate with more utility rates. You know, Jonathan, that's what this is about. And over the last 3 years, I've done quite a bit of block talk, and I've had an opportunity to talk to some great candidates on different things. We had Vern Winchy, who ran for president. He came very, very close to getting on the radar in Iowa. But a great man, and you know, he was willing to get out and fight. He's willing to get up and take. He used to say, take an act and chop it. Don't just trim around the edges. We got some huge legislation pieces all over our country and national, local level that's causing so much chaos. I'm a firm believer that it is very simple to explain to the American people that these big pieces of not transparent solution, whether they be legislation or some other form of a solution, are making more chaos than they are helping, and in fact, most of the time, don't even really address the problem at hand, like Common Core and a common curriculum. The World Book Encyclopedia for decades now has had a common curriculum that matches up with all 50 states. That common curriculum is not it's a red herring that they use. You've got there in Jonathan in the 7th district where Jennifer's at. You've got the black. And you have got opportunity in Alabama between the black belt, between the media industry, between some of these other things that we've discussed, the coal industry, and all kinds of other areas of industry. Alabama has got the opportunity to shine, to rock, to have a thriving economy. The brakes have been put on. The brakes have been put on in different industries. I want you to run with that a little bit and talk about some of the other industries going on in Alabama and some of the common sense issues that we can look at that would just turn around and open up the floodgates to bringing jobs back into Alabama. And that's employing and raising their standard of living.
Well, I tell you, when we talk about the 7th district of Alabama, it includes what's called the Black Belt of Alabama, and it's one of the poorest areas in the United States. Although Alabama's thriving, there were a lot of farmers in that area, a lot of settlers after the civil rights. And slavery ended. A lot of people settled down there. It was a very minority part of the state, and now it's become just a plethora of people. You know, the University of Alabama lands in the Black Belt in that 7th congressional district. It's become more and more conservative over the years, but a lot of people don't focus on it. It's one of the poorest areas because the education has not been the best in that area. In fact, you know, a lot of people say, well, Alabama always gets last in education. Well, no, we don't. It's just the way the federal government judges education standards. The Black Belt always tallies our score to a really low score. We actually have a great state, but it's a poor educated district, and we're trying to bring awareness. There's a gentleman named Matt Jenkins who just announced his race on the Republican side, and he's a friend of mine, and he's running in that district. And it's a tough district to run in because the way the district is drawn is mostly Democrat. And the district, there's just been so much ignorance in the district as far as people who have continued voting Democrat, and they just want to continue to vote Democrat because they were told to vote, they want to vote Democrat, and nothing is being done for their district. I mean, there's been some good things that have happened in that district. Mercedes built their plant in that district, and they are responsible for thousands of jobs across that West Alabama area. And so things are happening, but the thing that we have to do in Alabama is industrial development and job recruitment. We have to recruit these jobs. Our governor has put things in place. He has traveled overseas along with our industrial development board and our secretary of industry that we have. They went overseas and they recruited Airbus, which is a huge plane manufacturer. They recruited them to Mobile. And they're bringing thousands of jobs with them to Mobile, and they're going to be manufacturing planes that you and I fly on in the very near future. And I thought it was great that when we made that announcement and they broke ground, 2 days later Obama gave a speech in Chicago when he was doing his rally to start up Obamacare, and he took credit. He made an innuendo like he was taking credit for Airbus coming to America, and he talked about it. He said, America's doing great with jobs. He had nothing to do with that. That was done by our state. That was done by people who flew to France to recruit these jobs and recruit these companies. We have Toyota making motors here in Alabama, and then right over the line in Mississippi is the plant where they put them together. And literally, when I say right over the line, I mean like 2 minutes over the Alabama line into Mississippi is the plant. So they have the motor manufacturer right in Alabama, and then and right over in Mississippi they have the manufacturing plant. I mean, we're like the new Detroit. We've got Hyundai. We've got Honda. We've got Mercedes. We have Kia just over the line in Georgia. So we are big on manufacturing jobs. Honda is right literally a 25-minute drive from my house here, and their plant is growing huge. They were building the Honda Odyssey vans right here in Alabama. Then Hyundai is down in Montgomery. All these have great railroads that are going through them. And I think what Republicans and what conservatives and Tea Partiers need to realize is that we've got to have jobs in this country, but not just jobs that people have for a few months. We've got to have sustainable jobs. People can make careers out of these. People can retire out of them. We can't just have industries float by the wind like some of these industries Obama tries to create to put people to work for 3 months. That hurts more than it does good in our United States. And I think one issue that we've got to have in Alabama and in our Black Belt area is more job creation and more education. We have to educate people about jobs. And I think in our position in the Public Service Commissioner's Office, keeping the rates low and marketing our state because we have low rates, marketing our state because we have great railroads and we have safe railroads, and marketing our state because we have safe transportation. You know, our highways are safe. Our 18-wheelers are safe. And we're willing to work with these factories on tax incentives, which is the way it should be, to create jobs. We're willing to work with these factories on you know, shipyards down in Mobile and rail yards in the different areas that they are. And I think it's just about industrial recruitment and job recruitment. And we can't forget about how our small businesses will thrive. You know, small businesses in Pell City, Alabama, and Lincoln, Alabama, where the Honda plant is, have thrived. They've built a shopping mall. They've built restaurants. So the key is business. and putting people to work. And that's one thing that we've got to focus. And that's what I stand for, and I know that Jennifer and Stacy know that. We've got to keep the jobs going in Alabama.
Exactly. And it's the foundation. It's really the foundation of everything. You know, this great nation, over the last couple of hundred years, we have, through the free market system, have done some incredible things, absolutely incredible things. And it's where the battery that's in charge of our economy and our standard of living. It's so important. I do want to remind our listeners, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We're going to definitely go over the top of the hour. We always do every week. Blog Talk's going to cut us off on the live feed on the Internet at the top of the hour. But you can call in right now if you plan to listen with us at 347-205-9620 and continue to listen on. Or when we come to the archive, it'll all be there. The only people that are affected are the people that are actually just sitting and listening on Blog Talk Radio on the actual Internet page. So one more time, that phone number is 347-205-9620. Courage. If you're listening, go on. We're having some great discussion. As we go through discussions like this, Jonathan, it's so important because we have time, and this is why I like Blog Talk. We have time to let a candidate sit down and say, this is how I feel about it. Oftentimes, what we hear when we, especially a large election, a national election for president, or a senator, we hear everything in little samples that we get from the news media. Even some of the things that go on in some of the national elections, we don't even get, even from our own sources, sometimes more than just a little bit of the words of the person that's running. And with this format, we can let you sit down and explain why you believe what you believe, what you're going to do. I just got to say one more time, Alabama rocks, and it's going to be exciting.
Thanks, Scott.
I think we're going to win this, and I will pass it on to Fred.
Actually, I just want to break in here real quick because it's 8:51 p.m. California time, and I've got live election results in San Diego tonight as an assembly race, special election. You've got a lifelong conservative Republican. This is my example of how screwed up California is. Lifelong conservative Republican running for state assembly. We're trying to keep the Democrats from getting – we just broke their two-thirds supermajority by one seat. We have a race. The guy was a lifelong Republican. The Republican Party wouldn't help him, so he registered, declined to state independent. He got through the primary against a ton of candidates, and it's him versus the Democrat. And right now – 50.5%, Paul Leon. I activated my entire team, and we have been phone banking for this guy nonstop. And if the Republican Party ever figured out you've got a liberal Democrat and a former Republican pissed off at you that went declined to state, and they won't help him. So you talk about local elections and walk the walk, don't talk the talk. Me and some other people, Terry Peters from San Diego on Twitter, at Hippie Chick, HIPECHIK, have been just going crazy trying to phone bank for this guy, begging people to help. And the thousands and millions of people that want to whine, snivel, and complain have done nothing, but we never stopped. And right now, the guy is in the lead. We could take this seat out of nowhere. This is amazing. Between the Senate District 16 race and this race, I could finally have faith that Californians have woke the hell up.
That's fabulous to hear, and knowing, you know, we have a supermajority here in Alabama, to hear that y'all are trying to get there to get the two-thirds, I mean, that is incredible, and, you know, I'm going to send my prayers out your way that keeps going. I wanted to update you, too, on a congressional seat race we have in our District 1 congressional race here in Alabama. The results are in, and there were 9 people running in that seat. And Bradley Byrne is going to be in a runoff with Dean Young here in the next 45 days. There's going to be a runoff election for our newest congressman. Both gentlemen are great gentlemen. Bradley Byrne was in a runoff 4 years ago as our governor, and literally lost by a few hundred votes. He was the head of our state education system for a long time. And then Dean Young is a business owner from Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, and he has served on many boards down south, and he's a very conservative person. So we've got two good folks, but there's a contrast because Bradley Byrne is kind of middle-of-the-road conservative. Dean Young is, like, extreme right-wing conservative, but they're both great men and good individuals. I've had the pleasure of speaking to both of them and meeting both of them at the political events, and I think that they both have the best interests of the state. And if I lived in that district, I would actually probably have a tough decision on what to do, because one has had many years of experience leading, and another has had many years of experience in business, and I think it's a great mix. So just updating you on that really quick. So let's look for the, because one of them is going to be our newest congressman in Washington, D.C., which is important for all of America.
It is. And, you know, these are some great news. We've had a good day today for conservatism. I want to pass it on to Jennifer Montrose. I know she's got some things to ask Jonathan down there in Alabama. Jerry, I'm going to pass it right to you, Jen.
Jonathan, I just want to know, what can those of us that are listening tonight that, you know, as Blog Talk gets passed around long after the show is over and it can be archived and shared in many places, people hear this and they like what they're hearing from you and they see things and they want to help you. What are some of the ways that people out there can help you, even those that may not live in the state but still have a vested interest in wanting to help another Republican get elected?
I tell you, Jennifer, what I need is people can visit my website at, you can go to barbiepsc.com, and that's B-A-R-B-E-E, the letter P-S-C, like for Public Service Commissioner.com, or you can go to jonathanbarbie.com. Find me on Facebook, Jonathan Barbie. You find me on Twitter, Jonathan Barbie. I also have a like page on Facebook that's under The Jonathan Barbie. I would like this campaign to go grassroots, to be viral. I hate asking for money, but even if you just donate $10 or you donate $25, every little bit helps. I'm running a statewide race. What's great about that is I'm out spreading the conservative message across Alabama, working with small-town candidates. And, you know, I was at a meeting that had 10 people the other night, but I went, I spoke, I fired some people up. There was a local mayor there who's getting ready to run for election. So we're getting out the conservative message. So when you donate to the campaign, you contribute to the campaign, you become part of my team. You become part of the conservative team. And I encourage everybody to do that. You know, we're going to spend the money fiscally and wisely. We're going to do social media. We're going to spread a conservative message. And it's going to be a great race. And we're going to save these jobs in Alabama. And it's going to affect everyone all over the country, because we're having manufacturers that are coming to our state, and all of you, all across the country, even in California, will have had some product that Alabama has had something to do with, and whether it be a car or batteries or equipment, and our state is growing. And so I could use your help. Definitely go to the website, barbiepsc.com, or find me on Facebook and Twitter. I'd love to talk to you, for sure.
Well, thank you. It's been a great show tonight.
Hey, Jonathan. Jonathan, I was going to say, keep in touch with us, because during the Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich campaign, and we used it for the Paul Leon race just now, I have a rotating set of Google accounts that, you know, I live up in Northern California, 530 area code, but we were phone banking into San Bernardino, Ontario, Pomona, L.A. County, that kind of area, but I was using a local area code so that when you answer your phone, you're not going, where are you from? Why are you in this race? So, I mean, we've got phone bankers in California that can help you in your race when it gets closer, and we need to start making some phone calls.
Absolutely. That would be great. Phone calls, viral, share my stuff on Facebook, you know, share my
Absolutely.
Tweet, all that.
Yeah, I think it's imperative. You know, if we're going to take back this country, we need to make sure that we're not just electing conservative candidates in the White House, but we need to start all the way from the schoolhouse, you know, all the way through all the different, you know, county, district elections. And public service commissioner is a very important part. I know it is for Alabama, and
you know, and I'm grateful that we have people that are willing to step up to the plate, you know, and not just talk about it, but are actually doers. And that's one thing, you know, Jonathan, that I've noticed that you've been a man of action. You know, you don't just sit idly by and watch things kind of go to waste. I mean, you're out there trying to make a difference. And even if it's for a short time, you know, one of the things, I know last year, one of the things that frustrated me is we had one particular politician that seems to be a professional office hopper. And, you know, I just, you know, it's not about that. You know, it's to be about people and principle, you know, not party and politics. You know, and, you know, if you can get in there and make a difference for a while and then you find that you're able to move on to something else and make a difference there, then that's great. But, you know, it should be about people and principle. And that's one of the things I respect about you. You know, you're not in this just to get notoriety for yourself, but you're here to try to make a difference for the people of Alabama. And that I really do appreciate. And I know there are many others out there that would say the same thing if they had the chance.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate that. And I want to thank all of y'all for having me on the show. And, Scott, you rock, man. I love your show. I like what you're doing. I love to be a part of it anytime I can be. You know, it's going to be a busy campaign trail, but I expect to come back. And next time we'll talk some more about Common Core, and let's just let's bully up on Obama some more and on these liberal agendas that these left – far left wingers have. I mean, I'm ready. Let's take it on, man. Let's do this.
Well, you let us know when you're ready to start a Twitter-thon, and we'll keep the Twitter-thon going for you. Make sure that everybody out there knows who Jonathan Barbie is and why it's important that we vote for Jonathan Barbie in 2014.
Yes, absolutely.
Amen.
Sounds good.
I'll tell you, Jennifer, you've been saying for a long time that 7th district seat that Matt Jenkins is running for, and we had him on the show last week to converse. We're going to have him on the show soon to actually just totally focus on his campaign. But you've always said we need to take and make Alabama 7 national. And I agree. I believe we need to take Alabama itself and make it national. It's a great example to our country how to fight the fight and how to stand by standards. And part of it's because there is a level of morality and standard that you have there that the rest of the country oftentimes has worked real hard to get rid of, and you've got it there. And I'm excited, Jonathan. I am very excited to not only know you. You and I have had some discussions before, and I know where you stand, but I'm excited to watch. This is going to be a great campaign because you've got all kinds of experience on both sides. You've got some executive experience. You've got business experience. You've been successful. You won awards being successful. And I'm a firm believer that you're going to win. I'm a firm believer that we're going to have people all over the country talking about what's the public service commissioner's job in Alabama, because I know that Rodney and Scott and Dan and Jennifer and Stacy and many others are going to keep talking about your campaign until a lot of people know. We're going to post it in Cost. We've got all kinds of places to post it, and it's important. I want to back up what Jennifer said. You know, get in and support. Do how you can. Jonathan, I'm like you. I hate asking for money. I hate it. It's one of my biggest things about campaigns. But it's important. It's going to take money to get Jonathan around the state of Alabama. In order to win, he needs to talk to the people. And that doesn't happen free. 200 years ago, we would have put him on a horse and gave him a bag of grain and some water and sent him on his way. But it's not that easy today. It takes money. It takes gas. It takes food. It takes a lot of work. So please, listeners, go to his Twitter. Go to his Facebook. Go to BarbieEPSC.com and give him some money. Help him get this. Help him tweet. Help post out his message, because it's important. We're going to send ourselves around one more time to talk. I do want to make another. Teresa's been giving me all kinds of great information this evening. It seems that a lawmaker in Louisiana he's putting together a bill, a repeal bill for Common Core in Louisiana, and we know Governor Jindal. we'll take that up. That's for sure. And it just keeps going. I want to pass it on down to Stacy and then to Dan and back to Rodney for kind of towards our final remarks and still conversation with Jonathan, though. You know, we live in a great country. We live in a country where I can stand here talking on my iPhone and we can create a blog talk show like this. We had nothing like this when I was in high school. It makes me start to feel old. When I was a young man, when I was in my early 20s and I used to stand in the pulpit, an illustration that I used to use was over the last, you know, some of these people that were in my audience were 80 years old. What did they see? What technology had they seen? What changes in this country had they seen? And it's amazing. Some of them that were there to see before refrigerators and television, electricity, some of the basics today that we just take for granted. But in my short 45 years, we've seen a lot. Boy, have we seen a lot. And we can accomplish a lot using the technologies we've got today. We can help make these elections. Even though it's a local election to Alabama, it can be done on a nationwide base with a lot of help. You know, I know, Rodney, you had an incredible team of people really, really pushing, and they have stepped up on a number of occasions to help get the word out in California, and we're going to do that. So I'm going to pass it to Stacy for any last things you want to talk to Jonathan about, and then we'll pass it to Dan, and we'll pass it to Rodney, and then we'll come up and we'll come to the end, and we'll close the show.
Thanks, Scott. I did want to tell you that there weren't iPhones when I was in high school either, so you're not too far off. That's a very new thing, and it just touches on how impressive technology is. Anyhow, I think it's awesome that you've taken the time, or we've taken the time, to talk about a local race, because it's not just about Jonathan Barbie for PSC. It's about hardcore conservative values, principles, meaning what you say, being honest, representing people instead of yourself in every single election across every single state in this country. And seeing someone like Jonathan in that position gives us hope to know that there are people out there that we can get behind, and everywhere close to us, that someone can come out from the city that you grew up in, you were taught by his mom, and now he's running for a state office, and you know it's going to be okay. You just turn around and think, well, here's something I can get behind. And Jonathan Barbie, if you don't stick to your principles, I am going to drive to Trustful and get you myself. Because watching Ted Cruz tonight, by the way, still running strong, just reminds me how some people go into politics and lose their faith and lose who they are. And some people go and know exactly why they're there. So, Jonathan, I just challenge you to stay on target and don't lose who you are.
Thank you, Stacey, and I will. And I'm going to stand strong what I believe in and stand strong and protect Alabama families. And one day I may do it as a lieutenant governor, I may do it as the governor, or I may do it as a congressman. I'm not going to stop here. I'm going to serve the people well and serve the people as long as they want me to serve them, and then I may move on to the next thing. But public service is important to me, and it's been in my roots for generations. From my great-great-great uncle was John Sevier, the first governor of Tennessee. Then my great-great-grandfather was the high sheriff of Franklin County, Alabama. And then I had another one that was a probate judge. So helping people and serving people goes a long, long way back generations in my family.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, so many legislators get in the political system and they seem to get eaten up by it. You know, they get these lobbies that come in and start whining and dining them, and next thing you know, they're voting for them. And I mean, I'm assuming that's what happened with Congress this year or these past 5 years, that they've been basically bought out. And we need people that are going to have to put the country first. And I also, I'm a firm believer in the two-term limits. We've got too many politicians out there that have made this a career and have built little dynasties. And to a point where they have basic control, you know, like the GOP elite today. You know, they're the ones running. We had some wonderful candidates last election for president. You know, we had Herman Cain. We had Newt. You know, both of them are great politicians. And the elite basically let them get eaten alive by the press. And we also need to start attacking the press. And you know, the press is getting away with so much crap. And so, you know, and we need to go out there and start educating the public. And, you know, hopefully making them look like fools until they eventually come around. You know, it's frustrating the hell out of me when, you know, we're hearing companies, Gannett, CNN, these are big liberal corporations that, you know, they're pushing agendas. They aren't telling that they are not news organizations. They're propaganda institutes. And basically, they're doing pretty much the same thing Goebbels did during World War II. I mean, it's terrible to say it, but facts are facts. I mean, Common Core is not much different than Hitler Youth. And we need to stop this. We need to educate people. And we need to start at the grassroots and keep on building, you know, building from there. And, you know, we do that, we can accomplish this. This is not a task that's impossible. It won't happen overnight, but we can do it. You know, as long as we dedicate our you know, ourselves to this, as long as we get people involved, we can accomplish this. And I know we can. You know, all we need is the truth. And we have that on our side. We start just passing the truth alone, we could, you know, win every damn election. And that's about all I have for right now. Passing it on to Jennifer.
Cruz is now cruising on 9.5 hours. We have a cruise missile on the news. I think this is wonderful. We need more people to stand up. So for those who have not been following, there are many of us that are standing with Ted Cruz tonight. And, I think we need more people willing to to get in their uncomfortable zone, you know, and go out there and support the people, the Constitution, you know. And so, you know, it's a great show tonight. Jonathan, thank you for coming on. And periodically keep us updated so we can share it with others. I know there's people that are going to be following your race. You know, we want to see the true conservative voter win in this election. You know, there's a lie that people keep saying that you got to go moderate just to be able to make it, and that is not true. I think we are a center-right nation, and we're going to see that in Jonathan Barbee's race. We're going to see that in many other races across the United States. People that are running on a solid conservative ticket, espousing to the same values as Douglas and Lincoln, are going to have a really, really good chance in 2014. You know, and you know, I really am. Prayers going out to those in Congressional District 1 in Alabama tonight. It was a great race. I think November the 5th we will see. May the conservative candidate win. And for that, you know, shout out to Dean Young. And thank you again, Scott. Pass it on to you.
Rodney.
Hey, you know, I'm excited, man. This is getting good. We won the SD16 race. We got a Republican through to the general election in Assembly District 52. We've now got the Paul Leon race, and it's just – it's going, Scott. It's and Congressional District 1 in Alabama tonight. If people get off their butt – and this is one thing, by the way, that annoys the hell out of me. I was looking – I've got almost 2,000 people on Facebook. I've got close to 2,000 people on Twitter. Terry has – probably more than me. She was actually named as, if you've ever seen the hashtag TCOT, True Conservative on Twitter, she was named by John Fleischman of Flash Report one of the top 50 bloggers in America. And between the two of us, we should have had thousands of people on the phone, and we had like 15, you know, for this special election for Paul Leon. But we had 15 dedicated patriots that never stopped phone banking. And I had to go get my iPhone 5 replaced and get the battery fixed so I had more talk time. And I've got long hours now and been on the phone nonstop, utilizing my phone, my Google Voice, just going crazy, making phone calls and posting and retweeting. And she's on the phone with Paul every single night. You know, you get these honest candidates that did not hire some high-paid, overpriced consultant that doesn't care about the volunteers. We ran a grassroots ground game campaign, SD16, the Paul Leon race in San Diego. We got a mayor's race coming up. We've got an L.A. City Council race coming up. I just found out tonight. We've got another special election coming up. It's nonstop. But it doesn't take a lifetime of commitment for you to make a difference. The people just need 2 hours of someone's life. And if everyone gave 2 hours in each election, we could make a difference. We can turn California red again. This is a conservative state, but low information voter and low voter turnout. It is working to our advantage if we can just get the word out. People need to get off their butt and start talking. It is high time to take this damn country back and stop the movement to oblivion, because we don't want to wait till Rome is burning. And Jennifer's right. It's time to get out of your comfort zone. It's time to get down and dirty. And with that, I pass it on to Dan.
I agree with you, Rodney. We have to get people out of their comfort zone. I don't think any of us really anticipated us doing what we're doing today, you know, 10 years ago. I'm not a really big public speaker, nor am I much of a politician. I don't like politics, personally. But, you know, my love for country overtook that. And, you know, we listen every week to Red Skelton. And, you know, I was talking to some older people that were in the World War II generation. and how proud they were of this nation and how proud they were of the flag and the stars and the stripes. And, you know, if you wanted to get into a fight with one of them, all you had to do is put down our country. And we need to have that pride. We need to reinstitute that, bring the pride back into this nation. We have the greatest nation on earth, and we allowed a select few to screw it up. And let's take it back, put God where he belongs in the middle, and let's bring the Constitution back and take all of their stupid laws that they attach to it, remove them, and get this country back on track. And for that, I'll pass it over to...
pass it back to me.
Okay, Scott.
Great show. And Jonathan, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes here in a second to give your closing remarks and any last thing that you want to say. You know, early in the early days of the Kane campaign, we were sitting on Team Kane, and there was a handful of us. Teresa Brusky was there and some other people. And we were talking to new people about what was going on. And somebody said, yeah, Teresa Brusky, she does social networking. She's a good person to go to ask about that. And this person does this, and this person does this. And this person that was talking said, and we got Scott. Well, whatever Scott does. And I popped in there. I said, you know, I'm the cheerleader. I'm here to keep you excited and to help direct and tell you what you can do and tell you why Herman Cain excites me. And so that's the role I want to take as we end up the show. I'm excited. I'm so excited, Jonathan. You know, I just can't say it. I know where you stand. Jennifer said it just right. We know when you stand somewhere, that's where you stand. You're not one that turns around and redraws your line. You've got your line in the sand. You know why you believe what you believe, and that's what you believe. And we have so many campaigns out there that start and go just the opposite. They sit down and they look at the demographics of the people. They look at where the people believe, and then they set down their issues based on that, hoping to get the most votes. And you're the opposite of that, Jonathan. You have your standards. You have where you stand, and you know why. And I am excited. And well, like we say, we're going to give you every opportunity in the world to help collect a good crew and some social media help and money and everything else that we can do here at this little group of the five of us. We all stand together. And it's exciting. I'm looking forward to watching as this comes together. I'm looking forward to learning more about Alabama's more local politics. We had a great discussion tonight about the difference between California and the way we handle these things that the Public Service Commissioner is going to handle in Alabama. And I believe that next Public Service Commissioner is going to be you, Jonathan Barbee. So I want to pass it to you and let you make any final remarks that you need to make, and then we'll give out the websites again, and then we'll close out the show with Red Skelton, as we do each week.
Well, I just want to thank you all for having me on, and each one of you, and for the fight that you have every day, the conservative fight. And you know, there's one thing that I say about all of you and Stacy and Jennifer and Scott and Rodney and Dan and everybody involved is y'all are taking the fight to the people. And that is a good thing. You're firing people up. People are joining you. People are listening. And they're fighting for what they believe in, and they're fighting for what's right. And I wholeheartedly agree and support you. And I'm a fighter, too, and I want to fight for what's right. And just like it says on the website, I want to fight and protect families, you know, and I want to secure jobs for Alabama. I don't only want to create more jobs. I don't only want to market and create a better infrastructure. I want to keep the ones that we have. And so we have to fight Obama's job-killing policies. We have to fight his coal initiative, and we have to fight his green initiative. You know, he wants to get rid of coal, and he wants to put his green energy out there, and it doesn't work. It's not sustainable. It's not affordable. you just do a cost analysis, you can figure that out. So I want to stand strong for the people of Alabama, and I will fight for what's right, and I will do my best to block the special interest groups. And I need all of your support and all of your help across Alabama, across this United States. And you guys, I want to thank you for everything you've done. And I'm open to any questions. My phone number's on the website. You call me. My email's there. You can email me. And I just appreciate comments and supports and encouragement and prayers. I need prayers. I'm in this because I feel that God has led me to do this, and I want to do it unto Him. And I want to be strong, and I want to stand strong in my faith, and I want to help guide this state where it needs to be.
Amen, Jonathan. And you've got prayers coming from California big time, believe me. And you're right. That's the first thing. And we ask our listeners, keep prayers in this nation.
I agree. It is. We all need prayers. And, you know, just follow me on Facebook and Twitter and